Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Gail Watkins. If you haven't had a chance to meet me, I'm so glad you joined us tonight for our Breeder College Q&A call. I know we have lots of new people on, so I'm thrilled that you took the time to join us tonight, and we'll just talk dogs and dog breeding for a little while. Okay, so these calls are first come, first serve. I did get a couple of emailed questions in, so I'll make sure I get to those tonight. But otherwise, please don't be shy. If two of you would like to talk at the same time, then we'll just duke it out. But I don't want you to wait shyly to the end, only to find out that we're done and we can't get to your question. So please don't be shy. Go ahead and jump into the conversation. I'm going to start with the chat. You can always put information there, and then I'll go ahead and try and unmute you if you have a mic and we can have a discussion. So Darlene has a question that I'm not sure how. So Darlene's question really would have been a great question to ask during Laura's Facebook Live today on show ring problems. But Darlene, you're asking how to get a dog to stop I assume standing square when coming back to the judge. Susan, this is your first night and I may put you on the spot for this. Because Susan shows in confirmation a lot more than me. So we're only going to take a minute on this because it's not dog, we focus on dog breeding here, but Susan, do you want to jump in and answer that?
Yeah, sure. The easiest way I've found when I work with my dogs is actually I teach them a small game of catch, and then I reward with the yes when they catch, because usually when they catch, they come down square on all 4 feet. And then you can almost pretend to throw something and they bait themselves. They raise their head, they look at you, and they're ready to, they just have presence. If you're pulling your dog towards you, and you can ask them to move their feet up a little bit, if that's the case where you just need them to move up. I've actually worked on commands for moving their feet up, especially their front feet, or I will back them up slightly where I'm kind of looking over them and I can see that they're four square. And that's the 2 second segment of doing that.
Yeah. And Darlene, one of the things that I found, I'm nowhere near experienced as Susan, but I found that if you get into a sequence of how you're going to finish your down and back or your go around, so that I step in front of my dog with something for them to focus on, sort of like Susan's toss, so that when they stop, I haven't blocked them, but that they're looking at me waiting in anticipation. But I will say, fabulous question to ask Laura, our straight from the center of the ring expert, who is a professional handler, was a professional handler, and is a great handler in the ring. I'm going to jump to Sarah. Sarah, do you want to unmute? I'm looking for you.
Yes.
There you are. Hey, how are you?
Hi.
How are you
good,
doing?
How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
So trying to decide between two studs, potential stone owners. You had them complete Seabark. Boy, you have nice stud owners. If you're not familiar with Seabark, it's a really valid and reliable behavioral questionnaire that has been used for tens and thousands of dogs, probably 100,000 dogs at this point. So
I pay for my stud owners to do it. And a lot of times they're interested to do it because it gives them feedback about their dogs. So it's a nice tool. Works out for
both
of us.
That's great. You must sell it really well. That's fabulous. Okay. So both have good temperaments, but one has nearly non-existent chase drive and the other has moderate chase drive. The one with the better conformation is the one with chase drive. My goal is to produce working dogs, but I feel conformation structure is an important part of health. Absolutely. Is there a preferred range of chase drive in dogs who will do service work? And how do I choose between the two studs? So I think, Sarah, part of it is what kind of service work will the dogs be doing? Because service dogs serve in this huge range of behaviors. And there is a lot of retrieve in many service dog jobs. Not necessarily chase, but retrieve. And so it can be difficult with a dog that has no chase to get that willing and enthusiastic retrieve that you might need for opening doors and picking up telephones. And what kind of work do you raise your puppies to do?
So typically it's for psychiatric. My breed is standard poodles and they're fairly small. So I typically don't sell them to like mobility or guide homes. They do maybe light mobility, which would include retrieving things. But most of the buyers that I have that are interested in service dog prospects for this upcoming litter are interested in like psychiatric service dogs.
So my experience, and obviously I have raised retrievers for a really long time, and I don't think CBARC gives a lot of red flags anymore. They used to, where, you know, you would go through and they would tell you how many red flags your dogs have. And the red flags that they used to offer were for very, very high prey drive, very high chase drive that was almost on the verge of uncontrollable. Moderate prey drive tends to have a strong relationship with biddability and workability and dogs that want that engagement. Now, that doesn't mean that a dog that is a psychiatric service dog that has no chase drive isn't going to be able to do their work. But I would not worry even with a moderate chase drive that it would not be controllable in a service dog. The problem comes with the very, very high end chase drive where a dog really doesn't stop to process. I always say it's like flash to bang time is zero, you know, see squirrel run. And then it's like five steps down the road and it realizes, oh my gosh, I'm on the leash, or, you know, I'm tied to something. I don't think you're going to see that in moderate level chase drive. So I wouldn't worry about either of those studs. In addition, you're going to be able to assess your puppies, obviously. And, you know, there's a lot of psychiatric service dog homes that want to play with their dogs. The big issue with service dogs with chase drive is people who don't have the strength or mobility to control or train that very, very strong prey drive.
Okay. And to be fair, I didn't actually put this in the chat, but now I'm realizing like, oh, that was an important detail. It's not even moderately high. It's just moderately high compared to the breed average. So I think our breed average is 2.05. And this stud is 1.95 on the score. So
I wouldn't worry about that at all. I would take either of those dogs that fit very well. Yeah, I think the service dog world, it's sort of a interesting offshoot of that discussion, but it's been a conversation that I've had with a number of guide dog and service dog organizations, particularly with my breed. So with golden retrievers, often there is a strong correlation between chase drive and confidence. And the more you diminish prey drive, the more you diminish confidence. And so if you, and they aren't the same thing, but for some reason in my breed, they are linked together. And so if you look at a lot of the guide dog schools, they're removing golden retrievers most of the time for lack of confidence. And I think my conversations with them is because they have sought out those goldens with no prey drive, and in doing so have lost this confidence that's inherent in the breed. So that's kind of a an offshoot discussion, but it's something to consider, because one of the things CBARC doesn't test is confidence.
Right.
And one of the things that you want in the puppies you're producing is confidence. So yeah. How you evaluate that, or you find those questions to talk to the stud owner, you know, because you can't say, hey, is your dog confident? Because
right.
Yeah. I won't, they're not going to lie to you, but you know, they probably wouldn't have him at stud if they didn't think he was. So right. How do you ask the questions that are important to you? Strange places, strangers, loud noises. You know, what would he do if he saw one of those big balloons that mm-hmm. people ride in? I'm drawing a blank.
Hot air balloons.
So if he saw a hot air balloon taking off or something, what do you think he would do? You know, you want to come at it from a roundabout way, and yet what you're looking for is that confidence in the dog.
Awesome. Thank you. That helps me so much. I'm like, okay, because that's what I want is I have a service dog and he is not confident. And it took a lot of extra work, and I didn't make that correlation, but that's totally true. And so I really appreciate that. That helped me a lot.
Good luck, Sarah. Let us know who you choose and how it goes.
Thank you.
Excellent. Jerry, I see. Do you want to unmute, Jerry? Can you? Here, let me see. Yeah. I think I can lower your hand. And there you go. Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. So on her first litter, she pretty much wouldn't eat the last 2 weeks. And so I spent so much time every day, you know, playing games like, could I toss it and would she eat it? If she competed with the other dog, would she eat it? I tried everything. And I went, so I'd asked this question in the Facebook group. I went in, I'd tried before everything on that list already. Oh. Right. And nothing works for really more than a day. And she had some vomiting and some diarrhea. I was worried about dehydration. I wanted to have some sub-Q fluids on hand. So I took her to the vet today, and I think I have a plan. So I just want to kind of run it by you and see what you think. They liked the idea. And I talked to my repro vet, and she's like, basically, there's not much I can do. So they gave me some prescription probiotics because she won't eat anything. I can't get her to take the probiotics.
Yep.
So they gave me some prescription probiotics. I had a can of, and my repro vet says she uses this, the Science Diet AD. So that's like the super rich stuff. Yep. So what I was going to do, and yesterday I mixed that with water and some baby food, and I syringe fed her.
And how did she take it?
Oh, she was fine. And she would lick some of it. And then I left it in the bowl in her crate and she finished it overnight. So, and instead of trying to attempt to get her to eat something like 10 times a day, I thought, well, if I can just, you know, syringe feed her 4 or 5 times a day, I have a set amount. So I was going to do the AD, and then I was going to make the whole chicken soup, make some rice congee, and add some pumpkin or something to it. And I was going to have that as a mixture and put the probiotics in a certain amount that goes in one meal. And then I was just going to do that if I can't get her to eat on her own.
Yeah, I think that sounds like a good plan. And I would switch off days, because okay. This, I'll eat this for one day, but I'm not going to eat it the next day, is really common. Because okay. They don't feel really well. And, you know, it's probably the same reason that I don't drink rum anymore after a really bad college moment. And,
yeah,
you
know, I was thinking of that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a real thing. I mean, there's scientific research on how that imprints. And so if we change it up, we are more likely to keep them going. And, you know, the force feeding or syringe feeding, it's really only a problem if it is traumatizing the bitch. And some bitches are kind of, whatever. They're neutral about it, in which case it's not a problem at all. You don't want to be holding your bitch down or something like that. But if she's like, yeah, if you want to put it in, I'm fine with that. I'll just go ahead and lap it up. And then she finishes it, which is fabulous. I think that's a great plan. I'm not sure I would even worry about the pumpkin.
Okay.
Because the rice is going to give you enough fiber. And the big issue is you really want that protein and calories in, and pumpkin doesn't give you that. It's going to give you right. fiber.
More calories for the punch. Okay. I was on more the fence calories. About that. So.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. So rice and chicken, if you can get a little vitamin into her, because obviously it's a completely unbalanced diet, but you know, at this point, at some point with pregnant bitches, it's just about getting food into them.
Yeah.
And it isn't, you know, those last, all of the balancing the diet really came before, you know, it was the buildup to this. Now she can survive on some pretty flaky foods for the next couple of weeks. What you want to be careful with is calcium levels. Obviously we talk about that a lot, but nothing that you're feeding is going to be high in calcium. So I think it sounds like a fine plan. And I think we have come to realize more and more how important those last few weeks nutrition is, as much for having stamina during whelping and those first few days is, I think we're becoming more aware of how important that is. I mean, there are bitches who can't eat the last 3 weeks and whelp fine, but there are also bitches that stall out. And so I think your plan sounds good. And change it up as much as you, you know, make the chicken soup, try the AD. If that works, I mean, they tend to love really lousy stuff at this point.
Well, she loves rotisserie chicken, but she likes it when it's still warm. And so I don't know that I can buy one every day, because that's the other thing. I mean, she's 11 pounds and she had two, I don't know if you remember, but last year she had two very tiny puppies, like under 100 grams, and like for our breed. So she's a toy Manchester. That's just incredibly small. And she had one big puppy and now she has 5 to 7. So I stuffed her the moment she came into season. I just upped her food tremendously. She also has an incredibly fast metabolism. So she eats 6.5 ounces of raw twice a day in normal activity plus food for a dog that is 11.
My older 70-pound Goldens would love to get 6.5 ounces twice a day.
Yeah. So, yeah. But she doesn't, I mean, the moment she's pregnant, she does nothing. I mean, normally she just never stops moving. She's my performance dog. And so she does absolutely nothing. So I think her needs have come down from what they would normally be. But I'm just so worried with this big litter. That's why I want to have a plan now. And I can mix vitamins into the syringe, right, with the probiotics. So I can definitely do that.
Yeah, I might consider that if you've got a powder vitamin to, you know, even if you spread it out over a day, but you're at least getting more of what she needs than you're going to get. I mean, AD is a maintenance food. It's adequate, but it isn't really what we want a pregnant bitch to have. And chicken and rice isn't what we want a pregnant bitch to have as balanced nutrition, but it's protein and calories. And so, you know, you're going to be walking that fine line. But with 5 to 7 puppies, you're really smart to push the issue now. And, you know, honestly, well, no, you can't buy a rotisserie chicken every day, or you guys are going to get tired of it because you got to eat the rest of it after hers. But
you go, the chicken.
As much as you can reward her for allowing you to syringe the food in. So if it's a piece of rotisserie chicken after she lets you do it, then, or, you know, it's some training or it's some tug. Or it's a game, you know that you've done. Yes.
Well, sometimes she won't eat that. So it was one of the hardest, it was probably the hardest 2 weeks I've ever had being a dog owner, trying to get her to eat. And, you know, I was a first time breeder. That was my first litter. So I was, But I feel like I have a plan, and then I can start thinking about some other things I can do to create some more variety for her down the road. And then maybe the probiotics will kick in and maybe she'll feel better. So we'll see.
Yeah. And, have you had, did you say she's done some vomiting? Because you can certainly try some Pepcid to see if she has heartburn or if her stomach is bothering her. I don't know. Maybe Susan knows the dosing for an 11-pound dog in Pepcid, because it's a very small part of the pill.
Yeah, it's one pill. I would probably divide it in quarters.
That's what I was thinking.
You know, it's one of those pills where it's really not a whole lot, and I'm going to mess the pharmaceutical phytidamide. You're really not going to hurt. I've got a girl who's 30 days pregnant who just decided vomiting was her thing. So she now gets one in the morning, and then she seems to be fine. So okay. I would give it a try. And the fact that you're giving her a lot of food or a little food a lot of times during the day is truly going to help. Does she ever do dry kibble just as a go-to that you could leave out that you could snack when she wants to?
Unfortunately, with my dog situation, I live in a 600 square foot house and I have a Dalmatian who will
never mind.
And I've got another Manchester now who did not pass her health testing. So I'm placing her. And so when she's gone, I'm going to find something elevated somewhere so she can have stuff out all the time. But she's the chewing. I mean, sometimes she'll let me hand feed her, but she will chew one piece of kibble like 4 or 5 times.
Okay.
So it's an excruciating process. And yeah, so
I get that. The other thing is canned tripe. It's very,
Somebody mentioned that. And, yeah. Tripe.
You know,
it's on the list. Yeah. Green tripe.
And then there's, I have a recipe. I'll have to figure out how to share for Mama Stew, which is similar to your homemade chicken, but you basically cook a chicken down until it's including the bones, everything you'd.
Oh yeah. That's, I went looking for that. So if anyone, I heard it on this call and I had to go find it, but it's whole chicken soup and it is literally a chicken in a crock pot with water for 2 days.
That's about it.
Well, I've got it. Yeah. In a pressure cooker, you can.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah.
I use my Instapot. Of course, I don't use Instapot to cook human food, but just lots of dog food.
That's all it is. And then you stick it in a blender and then you have it. But that's what it is, in case anybody's wondering.
Yeah. And the good thing about that chicken soup, and it's not chicken soup that you could buy in a can, it's a chicken, but it has the bones plus the meat. And so they are getting some calcium, you know, because we don't want to supplement calcium during pregnancy, but they still need calcium. And so it is a more balanced food. So good luck, Jerry. I hope it goes well and can't wait to see the babies, all those 7. Holy cow. That's a lot.
We'll see.
Yeah. When is she due?
She's due October 19th.
Okay. So you do have 30 days.
Just curious, what did you do differently this time to get?
We did AI the first time and it was a maiden male. So he had actually never even been collected before. And so she was very worried about him getting collected, and it was in the middle of COVID, and I absolutely said they could not come pick her up. So then she did some things to improve. The sperm was good, but it was 2 AIs. And unfortunately we had to do Friday and Monday because of the way FedEx delivery works, and her prime breeding was Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then this time I did live cover by myself in an Airbnb, with a stud dog that I picked up And I just stayed with me for 3 days. I'd never done it before. And I got 3 ties. So
I think breeding makes us braver than we ever thought we could be.
I'm a pretty brave person. I didn't know until the Monday before that I was going to be doing this all on my own because he's in a guardian home. And with my breed, you have to go get on a plane or ship. And that's just all there is to it. So there's nobody on the road.
Looking forward to hearing how it goes. Okay, I'm going to take one of the questions that was mailed in by Diana Dixon. I don't know if you're on, Diana. I haven't seen your name. If you're on, unmute. Let's see. So, oh, there you are. Hey. I think you're on the phone. Okay. So you asked about what to put as the flooring in the puppy playpen between 4 and 8 weeks, because you have concrete floors, right?
Yes.
So concrete is definitely harder than ideal, especially if you are going to build up. So you're going to give them things to climb on and things to climb through. So an easy solution is to go and get a remnant of vinyl or linoleum. So you don't have to buy the whole floor. Just go to Home Depot or Lowe's or your local home improvement store and ask them for a remnant or 2 remnants. If you get 2 remnants and overlap them, the puppies are going to eat the seam. That's just a given. So you can flip it if you need to. But both of those offer some cushioning. And then you can put mats or something down if you have really high climbing items. But those are both very easy to clean. They're easy to disinfect, and that's what I think most people do, and it's going to be your least expensive alternative.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you.
Good luck. When do they do? Are they on the ground?
No, the whelping window starts the 24th, so she's gaining girth. She's got 5 or 6 in there.
Great.
Yeah, I'm excited. A little nervous. I've been reading all the things that could go wrong, so I'll be prepared. So,
yeah. So read what can go right too, because I do think sometimes we obsess about what can go wrong, and then we get confused about when things are going right. So, have your whelping rules and know those indicators that things aren't right. But
they're all printed out, and I'm getting them ready.
Oh, terrific! Send pictures.
Thank you.
Jen says that she can't raise her hand. Jen, so computer literate here. Do you have a question or were you just commenting?
Just a little comment, but I want to make sure you get to other people. Like Vicki Schomer said she had an email question, but I want to say I can relate to Jerry when it comes to breeding males and all that. You have to pull out all the stops. Anyway, I found out yesterday my female's pregnant.
Hey, so who is this?
This is Caddy.
And oh my gosh.
Right? And
yeah.
I haven't been on the Facebook for a long time, so I didn't even post that I even bred her. And I just want to tell Marilyn Spence that thank you for her inspiration, because even though my female did not have PIO, she is diagnosed with CEH, cystic endometrial hyperplasia. She had a small litter, naturally last time, but they recommended breed her again right away. And she actually cycled longer this time, which was good. And of course, I used Marcus, my male.
Yay. 7 years ago. I met Marcus when he was live, like, yay,
at a live presentation of Gail. But the funny thing is, it's funny, but not, my female will not breed with him. Because I had a failed one the first time with him, and they only did a vaginal AI with that. And I wanted them to do a TCI, but it was a first-time relationship with the repro. So I'm like, yeah, technically it should work, but it didn't. I had a failed pregnancy. So this is a miracle. We used a TCI. I switched repro vets. We used.
Are you still in Minnesota? Are you in Minnesota? Yeah. Who did you use this time?
The one in Inver Grove.
Inver Grove. Yeah.
They're fabulous.
Yeah.
I haven't seen them face to face because they all we have to stay in the parking lot, but all went great. Two TCIs. Everything went textbook. Albeit she has a small litter, but that's expected with that. They said, I'm just thrilled she even got pregnant, period. They saw three.
That's great. Right? Yeah, I mean, CEH is a big issue for us. And for those of you who aren't familiar with it, it's a very common change of the endometrial lining. So the inner lining of the uterus.
Well, she had fluid on the uterus that first time. She didn't get pregnant.
I remember that.
So that could lead to potentially pio. So yay, Marilyn, you gave me some hope there.
That's great. Well, and what do they do, Jennifer?
Say again?
When do they do?
October 14th-ish.
So just a quick comment from my repro vet, because I have a Labrador with a similar issue. They told me to be on the lookout for metritis after birth.
Okay.
And they actually put her on, what did he put her on? Cephalexin.
No, what was
cephalexin.
It?
Put her on cephalexin, just a general antibiotic for the first 2 weeks after birth. And we didn't have any problems, but that's why she's always only had three puppies. And she's been bred three times, once missed. But
so they put her on the antibiotics when?
They put her on as soon as she whelped.
Okay.
So I would ask, now your vet may not use that antibiotic, but that was just what was told to me, was because of the condition, which could, go into pio. It could also go into metritis, just because the uterus isn't super healthy. So mm-hmm. I simply followed their directions and she did well.
Oh, awesome. Good advice. Thank you.
Yeah, worth a conversation, Jen, especially because she had the fluid on the uterus previously. So, metritis is an inflammatory condition of the uterus. It's not an infection, so it's not pio, but it's really serious. And so making sure that you've had that conversation with your vet and you know what to look for. But just to say, having had a bitch with metritis, they're sick. Like you'll know it. You're going to monitor that temperature after birth. You're going to do all those things. Mm-hmm. But I think, as Susan says, having a plan, just having had that conversation would be a good idea. Whenever you go in for your last visit, have that conversation so that you know what to expect, what to look for, and then what should you do? What should I do as soon as I think there's an issue? Because the treatment for metritis is interesting. It's actually not antibiotics. It can be antibiotics in conjunction, but it's prostaglandins is the treatment for metritis. So antibiotics, the great thing about many of our antibiotics is they're anti-inflammatory. And so you just want to have that plan. But I think given her history, it's worth the conversation.
Great, thank you. I mean, the positive was she had a successful successful well, the last time, which gave me confidence, but still it could happen anytime, right? I mean.
Dog breeding. Yeah. Yeah, and I think just talking it through with your vet so you know this is what I'm going to do if this happens. It's probably not going to happen, but if it does, this is what I'm going to do.
Right, like Jerry was saying, look at all the, start reading all the bad stuff. So you're.
I know. Try not to look at the bad stuff. But we do have an article about metritis in the Breeder College, so might want to just look at that. Terrific. Okay, Marilyn, since you got cued so many times in this, you have to show us your babies. And.
Well, I have one here. Yay. With me. There we go.
Marilyn,
one of my possible little girls.
How many puppies and what sexes?
Yeah, I don't think we've gotten the details, Marilyn.
Sorry about that. So we had five puppies and two girls and three boys. And this
hopefully
is
hopefully you have your girl.
So I have two girls to choose from. This is one of them. And labor went a really long time. Yeah. And we ended up at the ER with low calcium and ineffective contractions. So she got a calcium IV feed and then an oxytocin to deliver the last puppy, which was actually the biggest puppy of all.
Oh, interesting. Wow, yeah, that's interesting.
The last one was the biggest one and the hardest one to deliver. Delivered at the ER. So we didn't do a C-section, no surgery needed. We just hung out there waiting for everything to happen. And, you know, she did fine. I had to go back in the next, a couple of days later and get another calcium IV for her because she had two retained placentas.
And did she expel them?
Yes.
Okay.
So with that, she got the two retained placentas out. So no surgery there either. So good. Surgery will come after she's all healed up because this yep. is the yep. last litter.
Yeah, Marilyn's bit pioed. Mm-hmm. And pioed, of course, while Marilyn was traveling. So it was a little exciting, but they bred her on the next heat. And here okay. is...
And here are one Yay. Of the five puppies. Yay. Miracle litter. So it can happen. Jennifer, have faith.
Oh, just real quick. I saw Diana Dixon ask the question, how did the vet determine if there was fluid on the uterus? That's a really good question. It was fluky. So when we took her in for her first pregnancy ultrasound, they found no puppies, but they said, well, there could potentially be one that we didn't see. So if you want to bring her back in a couple weeks, we can do another one. So I'm like, okay, guess what? That second ultrasound, big old fluid in the uterus. And we did a blood. We checked her progesterone. We checked her blood count. White blood count was normal. So she kind of chalked that one up to mucometria, right? Mucometria?
Yep. Yeah, mucometria. So that's yeah. when mucus fills the uterus. So it's not an infection. It's not bacteria. It's actually sterile, but there's a lot of mucus in there.
Yeah, zero symptoms. She looked great. She acted fine. No temperature, but... eagle eye. Did I keep an eagle eye on her to make sure? And they put her on some antibiotics, amoxicillin at the time, just to be sure, just to make sure.
So the first time I bred my girl, we used the TCI and she didn't get pregnant. But they said she had a tilted uterus and they had a hard time getting up into the uterus. So I don't know. They were very surprised. So that's why I was wondering, did the same thing. They said, well, maybe come back. And we came back and there was no puppy. So that's why I was wondering.
And the way I verified that it was CEH was that I had a C-section on her from her follow-up litter and they took a biopsy and sent it in. So,
yeah, the definitive way to diagnose CEH is a uterine biopsy. And obviously, it's a big deal to do it. So you want to make sure that this is an important bitch. And this is a bitch that's worth keeping in the gene pool. Otherwise, spaying is going to be your best option. But like Jen, I pursued a bitch with CEH. She had produced for me really well. And then I could not get her pregnant. And we ended up with three pups after it was not an easy process, but we ended up with three pups. And
well, last time I we did natural cover and she had two and she's a golden retriever. So that was very small. Well, this
yeah, that's small.
She's got five or six. So and we did just regular AI, but we did two. day and a half. I mean, we did every other day. We did a Thursday and a Saturday. So
always do two. I know one well-timed one works, but we don't often get great timing. Okay. I'm going to jump to a mailed in one and then I will go to Cheryl and Teresa. So this is Vicki. Vicki, do you want to just, I saw you were on, I think you're still on. Do you want to just unmute and talk about your humongous puppies? Maybe Vicki's off.
There I am.
There you are. Hi.
Hey.
Okay, I think you have the biggest puppies.
They're scary big. And they were scary flat. I've never seen that kind of anatomy in puppies. And
strange, isn't it?
It started out sad and scary because we lost two, and it was just it's been a steep learning curve the entire time. So the hobbling was wonderful. The lumpy bedding, good footing has worked really well. The 80, I call him the 80 pounder, but he's really 80 ounces. But they're only 3 weeks old. So I've got, he's great. And he's, so there's three, two girls and a boy. And I guess because they're just the big boy is 82, the smaller girl is 79. And then my other one is 60. There's such a dramatic difference, not just in weights. I think I'm taking care of the, we never got close to swimmer, but we definitely felt like we were flat. The puppies were, the boy was flat. The other big girl was just never missed a beat. She got up, started walking at two, never got flat, never had issues. But I have now this little 62 ounce girl who's very timid. And she is, even when I open her mouth, her canines aren't in. She's days behind. And so I have such a difference in these puppies, and it's been, I guess, troubling to make sure, worrying about her being supported in her shyness and her slowness and not being run over by these two big things that are just happy as they can be. And they're all ready to get, you know, climb out of the box, and they want to see me, and they're perfect other than they're just enormous.
But they're just doofs. Yeah, so she's actually at a pretty normal weight. So I expect my puppies to be about 64 ounces at her age. So she's not behind. She's just smaller than her littermates. She may be developmentally behind, but
yeah,
I would love you to stop calling her shy, because at her age, she's not shy. Like, shy isn't even in the vocabulary of a three-week-old puppy. They aren't mentally capable of that. She is probably not fully myelinated. In fact, I'm sure she's not fully myelinated, which means her nervous system isn't working the way we think nervous systems working. So, you know, a mature nervous system can connect a behavior to a result. But if you think about it, if those wires are not functioning and they're shorting out and, you know, the circuits aren't complete, then they can't connect a behavior with an outcome. Uh-huh. You know, it just sort of gets lost. Like, they do something and then something happens and they can't put those things together. Mm-hmm. So don't think of her as shy. Just think of her as immature.
Okay.
And absolutely continue to support her. Think of her as maybe 2.5 weeks old or two weeks and 2 days. So you're just going to back up a little. Mm-hmm. And I think you may find that she will rapidly catch up, but you do want to sort of give her that time. And I think one of the hardest things for us is to not compare our puppies. And I know you're not judging her in the sense of comparing, but you do want to make sure that your other two puppies are stimulated mm-hmm. and having lots of opportunities, and she's probably not ready mm-hmm. for that stimulation and those opportunities. So have the stimulation and the opportunities at one part of the box, and have another part of the box that's a little quieter. I would not take her out of the box. You can take them out of the box.
Yeah, I thought I'd do that a little bit.
Yeah, you can do that to give them a little bit of extra opportunities. Or you can take her out of the box with them, but have a little cat bed for her or have a mat for her so she can curl up there while they go off and do their thing. Because you don't want to underdevelop her, but you're right, you don't want to overwhelm her either. Yeah. So, you know, if you take everybody out of the box and all she does is sit there and cry and cry and cry and cry, you know, sometimes when puppies that age get completely overwhelmed, all they do is cry. Well, then just put her back in the box. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you want to walk that line between not isolating her or underdeveloping her and not overwhelming her. Now, between the three puppies, I would not worry a whole lot about their weight difference in that they're going to stomp on her or something. They will, but that's life in puppydom. You know,
yeah, that's happened. She seems to take it in stride.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually think it's pretty developmental for puppies to, you know, get rolled over and stepped on and things like that. That's what puppies do.
Well, that's when the mother flips them upside down on their head, so.
And puts her foot on them and scrubs them down and makes them scream. Yeah. So that piece wouldn't worry me as much, but it's more you monitoring how each of them are responding to the stimulation that you're providing and making sure that she still gets stimulation, but it is not overwhelming to her and completely frightening her. But don't think of her as shy. Just think of her as a little bit behind in development.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And it's probably just days. You know, to us at 3 weeks, it feels like they're hugely different. But when you think about it, the other two are only 3 weeks old. You know, it's not like this is a really big difference. So give her another week and I suspect you'll see an improvement and she'll be catching up.
And I see, like today I saw her engaging with her mom and she starts mouthing each other with the other pups. So every day I can see where she is progressing and I have to, you know, I know that she can hear voices now. And, but I have to be very just quiet and so gentle. She's lovely. She's just the opposite of the other two. And I have to keep reminding myself to switch gears with her.
Exactly. Exactly. And you're going to be switching between them, offering them each stimulation, but stimulation in their own way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good.
Good luck. Good luck. Thanks. I'm glad they're not flat anymore.
They're not flat. They're all laying on their sides on their own most of the time. The big boy likes to stretch spread eagle, but that's okay.
He's a boy.
Yeah.
Good luck with him, Vicky.
Thank you.
Okay, Cheryl. Let me lower your hand.
Okay, I'm unmuted. Okay, so I have these puppies that are going to be 10 weeks old tomorrow. This is my experiment on keeping them till 12 weeks.
I'm impressed. You're hanging in there.
So I had a temperament evaluation. We didn't do the APET, but I have someone who did do this. And one puppy, like when they threw the little ball, he went, got it, he brought it back. And then he's like, but I'm not giving it up. And he had to have it. No, I'm just saying, she just noticed this. And then she had to actually open his mouth and pry it away. And same with the tug toy. Okay. So she suggested that, you know, he might be a resource guarder. And I at least ought to be aware of that and start handling him while he ate and bring food, you know, add little treats or whatever. So I decided to start that a couple of days ago and should have started it sooner. I put my hand in his food bowl and he went ballistic. I don't even think, I just reacted and I picked him up by the scruff of his neck and told him to knock it off and continued to handle him. He did it two or three times and then he accepted it. And so he no longer gets to eat without me handling him. But I had probably three times that he reacted that way. And then I decided that's not working. So I'm just hand feeding him. He eats out of my hand now. And he's handling that much better. And then I've been using the taglines now when I can supervise them really well, because otherwise they just like tie each other up and pull, you know, it's a mess. But but so he was getting into something he shouldn't, and I raised the thing up, and he also kind of went nuts on that. And I just had to keep waiting and waiting, and then he finally calmed down. The other puppies are lovely. So I don't know what, I've never had a puppy do this. Of course, I've never kept them this long, but my own personal dogs have never done this. I mean, they've been eating separate since 8 weeks old. You know, I've been feeding them in a crate separately. So it's not competition for food. So just thoughts. Well, how would you handle it?
So this is a puppy with character, in my opinion. Like this is a puppy with chutzpah. I always laugh because these are like my kinds of puppies. They have opinions, and I love puppies like that. So what I see in a temperament test, where when a puppy does not give me the tug toy or doesn't give me the retrieve object, is what we call a natural hold. So these are puppies that want to have things in their mouths. And I got to tell you, a lot of us breed for generations to get those genes. That's what we want. We want those puppies. Have you ever read Ray Coppinger's book, Ray and Lorna Coppinger's book, Dogs, A New Something on Evolution, A New Insight on Evolution?
No.
Okay. Highly recommend it. Once you've sent your 10-week-old puppy, your puppy's home, you don't have time. But Ray and Lorna did a bunch of research on different breeds looking at neurochemicals during certain actions. And what they found was that certain breeds, when they did actions, flooded their brain with these positive neurochemicals. And so with retrievers, we've bred for hundreds of years for them to want to put something in their mouth. And when they do that, it's not that it's a reward. It's that it makes them feel like they're themselves. Like, this is who I am. I am a dog that puts things in my mouth. So I don't see resource guarding when I see a puppy that does that.
Okay.
How do I tell the difference between a puppy that has a natural hold and a puppy that resource guards? It's the behavior or the presentation of the puppy. So if a puppy has something in its mouth and he's walking around and he's wagging his tail, he has a natural hold. If a puppy has something in his mouth and maybe I go to take it and he tucks his head, I don't know if you can see me, he tucks his head and he freezes and he's rigid. He's like,
I think that's more what he was.
Okay, so that might be resource guarding. And we have to remember that resource guarding has kept dogs as a species alive for tens of thousands of years. Because if you're a dog and you don't resource guard, you're going to starve to death. You will have nothing. And so resource guarding is innate in dogs. What do we want to do instead? We want to teach that puppy that there are so many resources that you don't need to guard it. You don't need to protect this. So I think, frankly, that a lot of the dog training philosophies today enable us to create resource guarders, because we aren't teaching puppies that there are a lot of resources out there. We teach puppies that we're going to take those resources away from them. Mm-hmm. And therefore you have to guard them. So I take a different philosophy, and I was thinking about it while you were describing him going nuts over his meal. I was like, you know, I had a glass of wine with dinner tonight, and if you had walked up to me and touched my wine, I would have punched you. Like, it was a really long day and I wanted that wine, and do not be messing with my wine. But if you had walked up to me with a bottle and said, here, Gail, let me take your glass and I'll put a little more in it, I would have been all over that.
I was adding food when he did it.
That's so what you want to add better food.
Okay.
So if he's eating kibble, you want to put chicken breast in there, and you want to put a good size piece. Don't be dropping the little fingernail full. Put an obvious piece. And at first, don't take the bowl away. You want to be able to walk up to that bowl and have him turn and look at you expectantly. So how can you do that? You walk up to him and you drop chunks of chicken next to his bowl. So it's him, his food, and you all mean he's going to get really good stuff. And you can go out to dinner and get a steak and bring him back chunks of your leftover steak. So you are dropping mind-bogglingly good treats for him. And they have to be big enough that he can see them. You're not going to hide, you know, they're not, because you don't want him looking for it. Once you walk up to that bowl and he's like, hey, mom, what's up? Now you can reach down towards the bowl and hand him those treats. But you want it to be so obvious to him that the presence of a human being with his food is a win for him. And it is a big, big, big win. So I would take a step back. I would not bug him on every meal. I would only do it maybe every third meal. Let him have a quiet meal, and then you could walk by his crate and put in a piece of chicken so that there are meals that he can just enjoy his meal. You know, if you think about it, dogs, it is absolutely innate in dogs that they have to eat. We all know that. For those of you with Labradors, you know that that is equal to breathing. But we control 100% of their food. They don't get to decide when they eat. They don't get to decide what they eat. And if you think about it, if that was us and we never could do anything with our food, we would be much more paranoid about our food. And I think that's what brings dogs to this concern about food. So I want you to relax with his food. I want you to relax around him with his food. And you want him to think, it is a home run to have you near his food. It's just the biggest benefit to him possible.
Okay.
And this is, I'm not going to tell you that this isn't a dog with an opinion and a dog that's willing to back up his opinions. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that shows a lot of character in a dog, but it does mean we have to handle them. We have to teach them to trust us, you know, go back through savvy socialization. This is a dog that isn't inherently submissive or subordinate to a human being. He's kind of like, hey, I'm your peer and I would like you to knock that off. So that's what you're going to do with the food. And I think you can, you know, you don't have to feed him every meal by hand. You can feed him one meal every 3 days.
Well, I fed him by hand this evening. I fed all of them separately by hand just to see the differences. And the rest of them were like polite. You know, I could close my hand and they'd back away. One of them kept nuzzling me and I kind of tapped her and she walked away. She's like, oh, I'm, you know,
never mind.
I'm very polite, you know. And he was real polite and nice when I hand fed him. Not polite with that bowl. You
know? Yeah. So you want to, you know, just hook that bowl up. And John Rogerson, who's a really great behaviorist, as a British behaviorist, he has a technique that you may want to play with, or if you're going to sell him, talk to him about the owner. He uses three bowls and they're about 6 feet apart. And he puts some food, just part of the meal, in one bowl, and then he goes to the one of the other bowls and he makes this really big deal about picking it up and putting food into it and putting it down. And it's kind of dramatic. And when the puppy comes over to that bowl, now there's that piece of chicken or steak or pork in it. And when the puppy comes over to that bowl, he now goes to one of the other bowls and does the same thing. So now if you're thinking about, there's this huge amount of resource, there's all of these bowls, and you being present with those bowls is just positive. It's all just really, really good. And then gradually, as you begin to see the dog relax, you can move those bowls together a little bit closer. So now you're right near the bowl while you're picking it up and you're dropping food into it.
Okay. And what about the reaction with the tagline?
Yeah. So those are puppies. I just laugh at them. I'm like, oh, dude, whatever. And you are patient and you wait it out and they're like, this is terrible. And you just smile and laugh and you're like, you rock, dude. You just, I'm not going to change what I'm doing, but you just have your moment. That's fine with me. And then as soon as you see him sort of go, oh, you relax the pressure on that tagline, because you're going to reward that moment where he goes, oh, whatever. But
saying anything or doing anything,
right? Yeah, just holding the tagline. Don't okay. say anything. I don't even say anything once they sort of relax, because I don't want it to be me praising them. I want it to be the pressure on the tagline. Yeah, and you're not picking them up off the ground or anything. You're just keeping that head under control and let him have his little moment. I mean, I think he sounds like a really delightful puppy, but I do think you need to place him carefully. You know, he's probably not a puppy for a first-time dog owner.
Right. They thought he would make a great performance-type dog. I mean, he was real, a lot of attitude and a lot of impulse, lack of impulse control is what they said when they did the, you know, he acted first and thought later.
Yeah, that's kind of what he sounds like. And he does sound like, you know, he's just got an opinion about things, which those are great dogs. So I think you're right. Performance dog for somebody who isn't a first time dog owner, he might be a great match.
Okay. Thank you.
Good luck, Cheryl.
All right.
Okay. Teresa, you've been so patient.
Hi there.
Hey, how are you?
Good. So I'm considering breeding Esme, because she's 7.5 and we don't want to have another oopsie in the house again.
Thank you. Let's not do that.
Since those two love each other, they're going to produce another bunch of puppies. Anyways, so I need to know what to ask the vet to make a good decision. Do I go to my repo vet and do it, or do I go to the general vet that also does TCIs for the repo vet?
This is for the actual breeding, or to confirm for the actual breeding?
I want to spay her.
You're going to spay her.
Right.
I think personally that you can go to most experienced GPs. Most GPs have done thousands and thousands and thousands of spays. It is one of the surgeries that I think most vets are very, very good at. You're going to spay her 75 days or later after the first day of her last heat. So you want to get her into anestrus. So she's going to go through diestrus. And then ideally she goes about a month past that. And so at that point, her hormones in her uterus are going to be as calm as they're going to be. Now, she's an older girl, so, you know, it's going to be a little more complicated, most likely, but nothing that most vets can't handle easily.
So 75 days since the last heat.
Start of the last heat. Yep.
Okay.
And you could go 90 days, you know, you can go 75 days or later. You just want to make sure she's in anestrus.
Okay. So we might be too late and have to go through another.
When was the start of her last season?
She birthed June, and I expect her to go into heat again in November.
You're fine. You can do it now, but okay. I would do it quickly.
Yeah. Okay. Because the male dog's already checking her out. It's like,
do it.
Yeah. It's like, yep. Hey, you know something's going on.
Yeah, the interesting thing about dogs is they sort of cruise into anestrus, but yeah. They come out quickly. And so if it's not like you have to, it's going to take 6 weeks for her to come in season. It happens relatively quickly. So you could do it now and you'll be fine.
Okay. Okay. And then another question, food gobbler puppy. I've got one of the pups back for 2 weeks. Because the family's away. Now she was gone not a full month, but she is a food gobbler like I've never seen in my life. So
what do you feed?
Kibble for these guys. And so I got one of those activity dishes where she has to work to get her food. She's not a food guarder because I've got my puppy here and there's not a fight. I've been throwing the food in a little kid's pool with toys and making her work to get her food that way, because when she came she had quite an extended belly, and I think that's what it is, that she in four bites she's done her kibble. Like
this, I don't have a lot of dogs like that, but I'll tell you, one of my brother's dogs who stays with me can be that way. I just close the other dogs out and dump her food on the floor.
Yep. Okay.
Like, here you go.
Yep.
And you know, it's spread over a tile floor and there you go. You're gonna
scramble all over. So
Exactly. But it takes minutes as opposed to seconds to get it. I think it is really difficult to train that out of a dog. I think that's who they are. Yeah. And so what you have to do is look for those ways to slow them down in a more natural way.
Yeah.
So the floor is a great way to do it, especially with kibble. Much harder to do with raw food.
Yeah, well, raw food would be a little different for sure.
A little messy.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Thank you for your help and support.
Yeah, good luck.
Bye-bye.
Blessed. Wait. Oh, there you are.
There I am. I couldn't find the unmute. Oh my God. Okay. So I have Faye, who is ripe as a melon, and she is still putting her tail between her legs and not letting Zeus
breed her.
So I'm getting a lot of experience with this AI. I did not AI her today. I did what you had suggested and just gave them enough time and everything. And the poor Zeus, I mean, he just wore himself out trying. I mean, he just finally late said, screw you, bitch. I'm going to go and lay down. And he did. I know. And I said, okay, that's enough. But anyway, I'm getting a lot of experience with AIs, which I think is awesome. But my question is, I have other people that are telling me that, well, she can't be ready if her tail is being tucked between her legs.
Well, so I happened to be at Celeste yesterday while my dog was getting her hips x-rayed, and Celeste and I did an AI. So I've seen Faye and I've seen Zeus. Zeus is a good stud dog. Remember I said to you, Celeste, that she's still really firm. Her vulva is really firm. Like unusually firm for where she is in progesterone. And so the vulva, you'll hear me say it to people that when you tap the vulva of a bitch that's in early estrus or pro-estrus, it's turgid, it's firm. It's kind of like this part of your hand. It's soft, but it's firm. When a bitch is normally in standing heat, when they are fertilizable, it's pillow soft. So it's like you would touch a down pillow. It's that soft. She's not that soft. And so when they aren't that soft, it is more uncomfortable for the bitch and it is more difficult for the stud dog to be able to get in. The head of the penis is, it's like a guided missile. It is. I know it sounds weird, but that very, very tip is once it finds its mark, that's when the dogs start driving in. But if the vulva isn't soft enough, it can be almost impossible for the male to get in. It's why you'll hear me say a lot, don't breed too early. Some bitches can tolerate it, many cannot. Now, I don't think you're breeding too early. I've seen your progesterone, but she may be a bitch that doesn't get soft enough for a really easy insertion. And so what happens, I don't know if you can see it, but if you say this is the vulva, so she's still really firm down here. So he's trying to find the opening and he's hitting her, you know, he's hitting her vulva. And she's like, I'm not going to have anything to do with this. And I've had bitches that have been bloodied by that, where their vulva's just been ripped apart by a male that's trying to breed them. And so then they become really squirrely. They're like, I want nothing to do with this. And she wasn't that squirrely yesterday, but she may be losing her patience with this. So I'm not sure I would check another progesterone, but the last progesterone Celeste had was, say Wednesday, it was Monday, and she was 13 nanograms per milliliter. So she's ovulated. She is on her way. She is in estrus. By all measures, she should be breedable, but it's not comfortable for her. And him, even though he is a good stud dog and he knows what he's doing, he's not able to get in. And so I would probably not fight that battle. I might try for a natural tomorrow, but I would definitely AI tomorrow, because that was Thursday was the day we thought was LH plus six, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would. Is she a maiden?
Yes, she is. Yes, and she is.
She may next time after puppies may be much easier. I've got a couple girls who are just exactly like Gail described, and thank God for AIs. But the following breeding was, oh yeah, this is fine. You know, puppies came out of here.
Much bigger thing came out.
Yeah. But the maiden did make a big difference, and it wasn't everybody. It was just a couple.
That was going to be my next question. Do I have to look forward to this every single time, you know, I breed?
Only if you want to.
No.
Yeah, and I think Susan's right. I've had bitches that were very small on their first breeding, you know, small vulva, and her vulva is small. I mean, you know, I have to take pictures of it, but when I looked at it, it's not, you know, sometimes it's a big target.
Yeah.
It's a big target. She does not have a big target. Okay. It isn't really soft. Might it be that way every time? Yes. Is it likely to not be that every time? Yeah. It's likely she's going to mature.
All right. Well, then what I'm going to do is he does ejaculate very fast. So I'm not going to waste it. And I don't think I'll even try for it. One of the things that was really odd is that, every bitch I've ever had or bred, even when I haven't bred them, but when I like touch their back end, scratch their back end, their tail just flips right over. Hers tucks.
Yeah, she's definitely not flagging.
No.
And so, you know.
They don't all read the book.
None of them. So Celeste, what I would do is AI her tomorrow, and then Friday I would check vaginal cytology. And if she's still really cornified and no evidence of diastasis, do another breeding.
Yeah, what the heck? Okay.
What the heck?
Okay. All right. All right, that's an excellent idea. I didn't even think of that. Oh, geez, now I'm going to want to do a cytology tomorrow.
I don't think you need care.
What if she's in diastasis already?
I mean, you can, I think Friday.
You know, that tube we AI'd her with was not exactly a small tube, and when I did it, it went in extremely easy. And when you did it, it looked like it went in easy. So I was thinking, well, if she takes that, my God, and she's real for it.
I think so. Celeste uses the Mavic catheter, which is a good sized tube. It's not, I mean, I use really small AI tubes, and this is, I don't even know how to describe it, but it's a good sized tube, and it didn't phase her in the least. But if you think about it, we know exactly where to put it. He doesn't. He can't see what he's doing. You know, he's just trying to find the opening to the vulva. So I would AI tomorrow and then check on Friday.
You could also consider using a non-spermicidal KY. Jolly, and literally lube her up.
So yeah, you could try that. Yeah, so for him.
For him.
Oh, for him. Oh, okay. Yeah.
So if you've done the AIs, and
the problem is she won't move her tail.
Yeah, it is pretty clamped.
Yeah, and when I tried to move it today, he was so funny. He said, "Now, how am I going to get my front legs over your that tail and that hand?" I mean, he literally looked at me and looked at my hand and said, "I can't do that, Mom." So he was very expressive about that. It was really funny. Okay, great. Well, that
AI tomorrow.
I will post how it goes. But I will tell you, I'm loving this breeding, the actual natural breeding stuff. It's nerve-wracking. You know, if I don't get these two bitches pregnant, I'm going back to surgical AIs.
Don't say that. They're gonna be pregnant. Yeah. Okay. I'm gonna jump on. We got lots of
thank you.
So Holly says, has anyone ever experienced a stud contract where it states that puppies from the stud must be sold for X amount, meaning puppies must not be sold for less than a specified amount on the contract? I have not, and I probably would not sign one. Susan's shaking her head. She has not. I have studs, but I have a real issue with the controlling nature of some stud contracts because, you know, seriously, I'm the one that does all the work and pays all the money. Holly, do you want to add anything to that? Did you sign this contract or did you just get one and you're like, what the heck? Let me unmute you. Or you, can I unmute you? There you go. Hey.
That stipulation was added after the fact. So my girl went to get her AI and the stud owner called me and said, hey, you know, we're going to do this because our breed club got together and we think these dogs are worth this much. So basically I had no choice with the first girl. So, yeah.
I'm sorry. Wow. I hope it was about the ballpark that you were planning on selling them for or that you had already committed to.
It's more than I had wanted. I don't know why she added that in.
Does it benefit her? Does she get a percentage back?
If I don't follow the price, if I go against that, for whatever reason, I wouldn't, but if I do, she gets a sum amount at the end. So like if I would sell the puppies for less than what she wants, she gets a lump sum amount at the end.
Yeah. You know, why do people do it? To maintain the value of their dogs and the stud fee?
It is a champion, you know. What breed? Bulldog. English Bulldog. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah, it's
it's a done deal now, but I was just wondering if that was something that was typical or anyone else had experienced something like that, or, you know, it was just.
Anybody else?
Anybody else? I've gotten stud dogs who have required that I do not place with another breeder who is known for breeding DQ colors if I place with a breeder. I have gotten requests to place all puppies on a spay neuter contract that no puppies go to a breeder. And we had a discussion. And after that, I said, how am I going to continue my lines? this is why I'm choosing your dog. So I've gotten some odd requests, but yours tops the pile.
I agree. Yep. Yeah. And to do it after. You know, so I look at every stud contract as a negotiation. Like, this is a negotiation and then it's a commitment. And so I'm happy to go back to stud owners and say, hey, you know, this is an issue for me. Can we try this or can we negotiate this part of the contract? But to change it while you're in the midst of a breeding is just really inappropriate, in my opinion. So,
okay. I appreciate your input. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Good luck. I hope they're, she's pregnant.
Oh, they are.
Oh, good. Good.
Gail, this is Celeste. I actually had a stud dog owner say that he was going to do that. I don't agree with them ever changing anything after you've signed the contract. I think that's terrible. But the reason was, and I kind of agreed with him, the reason in my, I breed Labradors and I sell mine at the high end, okay? And he was thinking that he was, why should he have his dog breed to another female and they breed for half, and they sell them for half the price? And that always irritated me. You know, it's like people might want to go to them because it's half the price and it's the same stud dog. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, it makes them look better if the these are, you know, more money or whatever. I kind of get it, but.
Manufacturer's suggested retail price. Like, here's the bottom.
Yes. That's a good one.
MSRP. Well, good luck, Holly.
Thank you.
Julie asks, what's the difference between Avidog and puppy culture for raising puppies? I'm probably not the best person to give you the blow by blow, Julie. Avidog's much older than puppy culture. Jane might not be one of my favorite people. I showed with her for many years. Avidog's just based on a lot more experience.
Can I jump in here?
Yeah, sure. Hey, sir.
I'm sorry. I saw this question and I've been just thinking about it all like this whole time we've been on this chat, because I was having this conversation with one of my good friends in the breed just a couple of days ago. And to me, the biggest difference is puppy culture tells you do X, Y, Z, but there's no room for flexibility and it doesn't have near the resources. And so for me, this was my first litter that I just raised, and puppy culture said do X, Y, Z, but I didn't understand why I was doing X, Y, or Z. And Avidog for me, because it's based in science and because it gives you access to all the articles and the research and everything that went into it, it made it so that I could really fine tune what my puppies needed and what my goals were. And it gave me that structure where puppy culture, I don't want to say it's just like a tagline, but it's just, you know, it's something to do and it's a way to raise the puppies. But the Avidog to me was just so much more moldable for what I wanted out of my program.
Excellent. Thank you.
Sorry. Thanks, to Sarah. Just jump in. I couldn't help myself.
No, I mean, Sarah, you've looked at both of them. I haven't looked at puppy culture in many years since I got thrown off the site, Julie. So I don't know if you have any specific questions or, you know, Avidog's approach is to take you from before you've bred your bitch through placing your puppies and kind of every aspect of that. You know, think of what we've talked about tonight. What are the signs of metritis? What do you need to do for food when you have a bitch that doesn't eat? So Abidog's been built to be as comprehensive a program for every breed that you can possibly do, because really raising puppies begins before you've even bred your bitch. And so that's what we've tried to produce. I know I would love to have the production quality of Puppy Culture. I mean, her stuff is gorgeous. It's just beautiful. But we've never had the money or the experience. So you get me, you know, on PowerPoint, on my computer. So we're not quite as spiffy, but I think we have the success. You know, I've got the only two, I have the only dog that's been the national agility champion twice, golden retriever. Like, there just aren't golden retrievers that are the national agility champion. The national rally champion, you know, if you're looking at performance dogs, we've done it. We've produced it. And if you look at Abidog breeders, they've done it with non-normal breeds, you know, not the normal breeds that commonly do it. So I think we have the backing, but I know Puppy Culture is really, really popular. Susan, you want to jump in?
See your hand. Yeah, I am. I tried very hard to raise my hand here, although that's not you my did way.
Very well.
I'm a jumper inner. So when I met Gail, this was, golly, about 8 years ago now, and it was like an instant click, because I had looked all over and kind of made my own little, this is how I do it. And when I met Gail, it was like someone finally validated everything I was doing, because I felt like I was, you know, out in the wilderness, and I was the only one who had found, you know, some of these things. And some of you are on my Canine Repro group page, so you've seen me in action. I haven't had the quantity of success that Gail has, but I have just finished a Champion Master Hunter that is my breeding. I've also finished Gordon Setters and just a Dachshund. Who would have suspected that one? But what I find Abidog truly is holistic. And I think that Sarah kind of hit the nail on the head in that it takes you from, this is a girl or a boy I want to breed. What do I need to do? How do I look at this holistically? And it's not just check a box off, because you're starting way before you're breeding. And you're actually going all the way to savvy socialization, and you're working with your puppy owners. So it is a much more, to me, holistic program that is science-based. It is very easy to tweak it, as Sarah said, for we have people in 600 square foot homes. We have people in 5,000 square foot homes. We have people breeding 10 litters a year and people breeding 2 litters a year. And it's very easy to take the tools, the questions that you have, like for Celeste, when the bitch doesn't read the book. But there's a community that can help you solve your problems. Whereas for me, Puppy Culture isn't bad, but it was just told to me. It was done to me rather than being done with me. And I have found that Abidog and the things that Gail and I are doing with Good Dog, we are trying to do it with you so that we take your experiences as well. And a lot of the old wives' tales that we found, and we validated them with science. So I think it's a really organic way of doing things that's continuously evolving. And I know Gail and I are continuously shooting articles back and forth to each other. Did you see this? I saw that. Did you see this? So there's a constant learning curve, and it isn't that Abidog is the only way, but I think it's a way that is constantly evolving and constantly getting better as it looks to be better. And that's pretty cool for me. You know, my program, I won't say it's winding down, but it isn't what it was 10 years ago, size-wise, and I'm happy with it. But I think a lot of the things that I'm learning now, God, I wished I'd known 40 years ago when I first started.
That's so true.
That's my 2 cents worth.
Well, thank you.
Julie, any specific comments?
That does help a lot. So I, you know, when I was reading through all the resources that Avidoc had, I was so excited. Because there's so many, I mean, I couldn't even sleep the first night because there's so many links to every question that a person could have was in there. And I was, my previous litter, you have to use puppy culture. And when I found this, I'm like, wait, this seems better. Maybe I'm crazy, but this seems better. So I am super excited to use this, this whole thing is just, I'm pumped. So anyway, thank you for answering my question.
we're thrilled you're here, Julie. Okay, unfortunately, I'm down to the last question. Cindy, I'm gonna catch your questions. Are you still on? Can you unmute?
Yeah.
Hi, Cindy.
Yes, I'm here. Hi.
Yeah. So you have a discharge today on day 58, and you sent a picture, Nicole. I don't think I got the image, so I'll have to look at it tomorrow.
That's okay. I sent it to Ann Barnett, a good dog, and then I sent it to you. But she has 9 puppies. She's 30 pounds, so that's a large litter for a Wheaton. I took her in on Monday instead of tomorrow for x-ray because she was huge. She is engorged, very, very large, very, very large breast. You would think she was already nursing. But they're soft, no redness or any signs of mastitis. She's eating, but her temperature dropped today at noon, and it was confirmed tonight at 6. So she's 98.8, and then she had this discharge at 6 p.m. Caramely, you know, jelly-like. She's been having clear discharge. It doesn't smell, but I'm concerned because of obviously she's on day 59 tomorrow, tonight at midnight.
And you're sure it's day 58? You had ovulation? I'm sorry, I don't remember, but
I didn't. And we, by breeding, we took progesterones and bred her, and we were thinking more like next week, Monday.
Do you have any of those progesterones?
I do. I can send them to you.
Yeah. Would you either post them on the Facebook group or send them to me? I'd like to just go through the numbers. My first thought, and I'll let Susan chime in. My first thought is run a progesterone tomorrow. And are you in California?
No, I'm in Wisconsin.
Wisconsin. So it's too late, obviously. You can't be running it now. So no. Tomorrow morning, get her in for a progesterone to see if her progesterone is dropping. So send the pre-breeding progesterones now so we can confirm the date. And then you want to see if she happened to be dropping. Susan, do you have?
Yep, ultrasound for gut motility. If you've got gut motility, she may be further along than you think and your progesterone may not drop. But if she has gut motility in the puppies, that's the sign that she's well within the whelping window. If you think
it's
a little early, you can also ask the vet about what they think about doing a shot of dexamethasone to help speed the development of the lungs up. And that will help if she has to go in for a C-section for any reason. And it won't hurt the puppies.
Won't hurt her.
No, it just speeds up development. But again, it's a conversation you have with your repro vet, but I would definitely go for gut motility.
Okay. Yes. Gut motility.
So,
okay.
Yep. So you're going to get her in tomorrow morning. Hopefully no puppies tonight, but if puppies come tonight, you know, it's fine. You're going to run a progesterone test on her. You're going to have an ultrasound done and they can look at the gut and see if there is movement in the gut and they can check heart rates on the puppies.
Yep.
And then that shot of dexamethasone helps the surfactant. Is that the right word? Surfactant.
Surfactant in the lungs.
Surfactant hey, in the lungs.
You pulled me out on the Pepsi AC. I'll pull you out on this one.
So those would be the things that I would do. But excellent. if her temp's down, I would just be ready tonight. You know, just keep her with you. Don't stay up all night, but keep her with you just in case.
Okay. Okay, well, definitely. Thank you so much.
Yeah, hang in there, Cindy. And then on the eating only food she'll eat now is still in chewies and egg and powder probiotic. Yeah. That's all fine.
You're good.
Yeah, she You're ate good. Some chicken tonight. Chicken breast that she ate some of that. She's eating and drinking. Yeah, well,
that's all fine. Those are perfectly good things for her to be eating now.
Just so I know.
Wheaton.
What?
Oh, that's right. Never mind. You said it.
Yeah, she's a Wheaton. Yeah, so 9 puppies. You timed your breeding well.
Yes.
perhaps a little too well there, Cindy.
Well, thank you very much.
Good luck. Hey, will you touch base and let us know tomorrow how it goes?
I will. I absolutely, and I'll go upstairs and send the report of her last progesterone.
That would be great. Thank well, you guys, so you have wasted another perfectly good 90 minutes with us. Thank you, Lynn, Cindy, for sharing your baby there. Sorry, I'm just looking at puppies. Yeah. Sorry, Susan, go ahead.
Lynn Crossman has a question. If we could get to it, it looks a little urgent. Her girl's jumping out of the whelping pen and moving her puppies around. And she's concerned.
Lynn, increase 6 puppies last night, 4 days early.
Yeah, she was due Sunday, and she, while I was eating supper last night, she decided to start whelping.
And how are the puppies? Are they mature?
They look like it. She took a long time, but it's her first litter. She went from 9:45 last night to her last one was 3:45, but she would lay down and go to sleep for a while and then get up, have a puppy, go back, go lay down. No stress.
Is this a Sheltie?
Yes.
So more calcium.
Okay.
A lot more calcium. If you have calcium citrate, give her calcium citrate now because it's a really good emergency oral calcium supplement because it is absorbed so quickly. Reduce the temperature in the room. Make sure there are no other dogs around. Protect her. The other litter shouldn't be around the other mothers. Put a white noise machine on her. Just turn on the radio or some music so that she can't hear the other dogs. And check her temperature, her body temperature, and make sure she doesn't have a fever.
She was in the white plastic whelping pen that's 4x4. And I had to go for a meeting, and my sister was at home doing chores, and she comes back in, and Rosie had taken every puppy out and put them by the bed.
That's usually calcium. Okay. It's either calcium or she's not feeling particularly secure and safe.
Okay.
And so, you know, what makes them feel secure and safe is protection from other dogs. That means closed door, not just a pen or something like that. An easy thing to do is to put an X pen around the whelping box and put a sheet over the top of it so it feels more den-like to them.
Okay.
But make sure it's not too hot in there. You know, she's got coats. She's got a fair number of puppies that are up against her. She's lactating, which increases their body temperature. And if they're too hot, they're going to take those puppies out and move them someplace cooler. So those are my suggestions, Susan. What would you add? Those are
mine. Adaptyl plug-in would be my only other thing.
Yep. Do you have any Adaptyl plug-ins, Lynn?
No.
So I'll just order them off of Amazon.
Away to get one, or 2 hours away.
Yeah, order it off of Amazon. You don't need it tonight, but just given sort of her anxiety level, I would get a few and, you know, just plug one in. They last 30 days. So they're easy to have around.
Okay.
Good luck. Congratulations on the babies.
Yeah. The lady that I bred the other dog, she just had a puppy and it was a week late. But she only had one puppy. And then I had bred Rosie and I figured she was due Sunday. And then she had him last night.
Well, if all the puppies have coat and were born alive and, you know, because the only way to really predict accurate whelping is using hormone testing, progesterone or LH. Yeah. Because breeding... the whelping window is like 7 days. I mean, it's really, really long. So they may well be right on time. You know it if they're really early because they aren't going to have hair and they're going to look a little more like baby mice.
They all have nice coats. So.
Oh, good. Good. Then that sounds like they're right on time. Good luck, Lynn. I'm gonna jump because everybody's been so patient. Thank you, guys, and don't forget what day this Saturday health symposium, 11 to 5. Would love to see you on for any of the sessions, and of course, cheering me on at the end of the day. I would love that because everybody will be tired by then. And if you are a good dog breeder, you'll get an email on Friday. Otherwise, go to Good Dog Breeder Center Facebook page and sign up there. Anybody can come, tell your friends. It's open to everyone, and it looks like it's going to be a good time. Thanks, guys. Wonderful to see everybody. Thank you for joining us. Bye now.